Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. We are continuing our march through the Al Ewing run on Avengers, marching off of our coverage of the John Hickman run on Avengers. This week, we are talking about Al Ewing's first series of the Ultimates, also called Ultimates Omniversal. We're covering issues 1 through 12. That's the trades. Volume 1, Start with the Impossible, that does 1 through 6. And then that's covering the slightly less good trade that does issues 7 through 12, Volume 2, Civil War 2. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing all right, Bob. You made a little error there, and I want you to leave it in when you're editing, because I struggle with understanding what the difference between omniverse, multiverse, what is going on there? Can you explain it to me like I'm five?
So multi would mean many universes. Universe would mean one universe.
Now omni.
Unified universe. And omniverse would mean all universes. And I guess it's a way of talking about a multiverse that constitute a universe. It could also maybe entail a couple of other things, but it would be a way to talk in universal terms about the multiverse, but in a way that stresses unity more than the term multiverse would. That would be my theory.
Okay. See, I kind of thought through it, and I was thinking, my understanding is along the same lines as you, but my understanding of omniverse is like, that's everything that could ever be in a Marvel comic that you'd ever want to see. We're talking anything. Freaking Zelda. Mario. Anything that exists. Then your multiverse, that's your Marvel. That's everything just going along there within that timeline or within those specific timelines. The stuff we're reading now. Okay.
I don't know if you remember this term from DC, but the way you're describing it is like hypertime.
There you go. That's my understanding of it. It took this comic, this run, for me to get an idea of, to really be able to picture it in my brain.
I like how you describe it too. And the way you describe it is, mine is more just going off the meanings of the prefixes in the common use, but you're going off the meta sense that this comic, especially the first trade of this comic, really gets into, which Al Ewing really does like the meta stuff.
Bob and I have read things from an omniversal perspective and cover them on the podcast, like the Archie stuff. We're not going to see Archie show up in the Ultimates. But yeah, he's part of our omniverse.
But yet he did show up in the Archie versus Punisher. Another wrinkle to go ahead and get into. Matt, do you feel like you understand Galactus's origin, which could play into this word omniverse?
Yes, and I appreciate that because they do go back and they retell the whole story, and that's in a later issue, but we'll dive into that a little more. But my understanding is that Galactus, basically his ship or whatever, protected him as his universe was being destroyed. And whatever was left of that ship kept having to reform at random until finally it created an incubation pod that allowed Galactus to transform into what he is. But the problem is that his ship was attacked before he was able to make his final evolution. That's why he wound up being the devourer of worlds, because he was so hungry all the time.
Exactly. And it's important to note that Galactus is known as the last survivor of the sixth universe. And this current incarnation of the Marvel Universe is the seventh.
Or is it the eighth, Bob?
The eighth.
Because we witnessed an entire universe collapse in Secret Wars.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little in issue six when we get to it.
Anyone listening to this out of context thinks we're insane.
That would be a third possibility for what omniverse means, is it means the whole cycle of the life and death and possibly resurrection of subsequent multiverses. So that would be the omniverse.
It's insane to actually have to think this through, but it's fun.
So listeners, as you can imagine, this would be a challenging thing to render, but I think our artists do a pretty good job. We've got Kenneth Rocafort is our main artist. He does issues 1 through 5 and 7 through 11. And then we got our guy, Christian Ward, listener of the podcast, Christian Ward. He's probably not still listening, but I hope he is. We really enjoyed his work on City of Madness, and at least I really enjoy his fill-in work here on issues 6 and 12, which are definitely the most conceptual issues, and we will get to those and those implications for our discussion of the multiverse versus the omniverse versus the universe pretty soon.
All right, Bob. So moving into this.
All right. The first trade, Start with the Impossible, covers issues 1 through 6. You wanted to lead off with issue number 1.
Yeah, we're introduced to Neutronium, Bob, which the comic then later on goes at some point to refer to it as ISO 8. Okay? And I was, wait a minute, ISO 8? I know that thing. That is what they used to level up people in a lot of the video games around this time. They took that concept and ran with it in different mediums. However, the problem is it has a different type of origin. So I almost feel the ISO 8 they're referring to there is different from the ISO 8 referred to here in Neutronium. And for those who don't remember, Neutronium is like the material that's found between the actual universe. It's like pulling from the dreaming.
Glad you reminded me of that. Yeah. I didn't really remember.
Yeah, it makes sense as something that would power you up, because it's supposed to be what the cosmic cube and all that crazy, the really powerful pieces of artifacts in the Marvel Universe are made of.
Like you say in the notes, right, this is the type of stuff that I haven't read that many of the Ultimates comics before this. I've read a little of Mark Miller's and a little bit of John Hickman's Ultimates. And usually I think the Ultimates is in the tradition of Warren Ellis's Stormwatch and Authority and Mark Miller's Authority. They're usually trying to go for both really big, dumb, stupid action, but also really big, wild sci-fi.
Cosmic confusion is what it is.
Matt, I had two guesses at your favorite panel from issue number one. My first was page 6, where Black Panther assures the UN Secretary General that a U.S. military alliance with Wakanda isn't happening because it would only slow Wakanda down. Or on number 8, when he assures the Secretary General that Galactus doesn't hold grudges. They're beneath him, Galactus.
You hit it on the mark, the first one, Bob. I really appreciated the Black Panther explaining how America's just going to slow stuff down.
Not at all relevant because of events this weekend.
No.
So, Matt, to go into Trivia Corner, we won't do Trivia Corner every issue of this series. It's not really needful, but I did feel like it was needful for this first issue. We talked about Miss America way back in our episode on the film Doctor Strange 2, but I honestly don't remember how familiar you are with her. Do you feel like you pretty much have her deal down?
For listeners, my understanding is that Miss America is able to jump between multiverses.
I would put it different universes within the multiverse.
So Miss America is able to jump between different universes within the multiverse, and she does it making stars. Every time she pops out, and I think she's super strong too, maybe.
Yeah, she's also generally pretty powerful, and a lot of times when she's like hitting people, the stars show up too.
They will not tell you that she's super strong like that until much later in the run when Thanos throws her down. And you're like, oh, is she dead? And I was like, oh no, okay, she's right back up. Okay, cool. I did not know that part. I missed out on that, her being invulnerable.
But yeah, she's a good addition here, along with, we've got Black Panther, we've got Blue Marvel, we've got Captain Marvel, we've got Monica Rambeau, who, in preference to her expressed preference in the last series, I'm going to call Auntie Monica, and it's a good squad.
It's a really powerful squad.
It's a very powerful squad. All right, so another bit of Trivia Corner here is that we have Blue Marvel expressing some doubt about his son, Blue Marvel Jr., who's actually named Dr. Positron, but Spider-Man joked that he should be called Blue Marvel Jr., and I thought that was hilarious because of the Captain Marvel Jr. reference. I'm sticking with that. Also, Dr. Positron's a stupid name. But apparently in the book Going at the Same Time, which is Bobby DaCosta, Sunspot's New Avengers, New Avengers AIM, in that book, Blue Marvel Jr. has joined up. And we also have Blue Marvel expressing concern that he doesn't want these new Ultimates to become a new Illuminati, which does a little bit set up this book's role as the replacement for Hickman's New Avengers book, Hickman's Illuminati book, which we just finished covering.
There's a bit of foreshadowing there too, folks, with the new Illuminati.
There is a bit of foreshadowing. And then the last little bit of trivia, Matt, is we see the Punishers. Those are not multiversal Frank Castles. Those are Galactus's robots from his first appearance in Fantastic Four, and I'd totally forgotten they were a thing.
I don't think I've reached that point in the comics, in my old school reading of FF, so.
It's issues 48 to 50.
I got a little while to go, but I'm looking forward to that.
But listeners, we will at some point soon put out a Fantastic Four Epic Volume 2 episode, which I'm looking forward to.
For sure, yes. I'm almost done with that.
All right, Matt. So in the cliffhanger for issue number one, we have Blue Marvel and Captain Marvel visit Galactus, and they offer to cure his hunger.
Yeah, they're going to choose one of the biggest problems that the Marvel Universe faces, Bob.
Indeed, indeed. And listeners, because of the way they do the titles in this series, they're often spoilers, so it makes more sense to do this melodramatic reveal of describing things to you. I apologize for the melodrama, but it seemed like the best way.
Well, so, Bob, with issue number two, this is my favorite cover of the whole series because it pays tribute to Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. And I like how he actually incorporated the Ultimates in the design and the backgrounds.
It's good work. It seems a very apt cover for an issue that kind of begins by giving us Galactus's origin, which you already covered for us pretty well.
Oh, yeah. I really appreciate Ewing doing that. Because anytime he does go back a couple of times and repeat stuff that's been done in other issues. But this, you have to know this if you're going to understand what's going on.
I don't know if Matt would agree with this, but I feel like he explains things a lot more in this than he does in The Mighty Avengers. But I don't mean that as a criticism of The Mighty Avengers. I think when you're dealing with these cosmic and omniversal concepts, the explanations are much more needful, where Mighty Avengers is a superhero book. And even though you don't fully know what young Power Man's deal is, you can just take it on faith and keep going.
But he also doesn't have to worry about sliding in some random crossover to mess things up. So maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, that's interesting that on the one hand, this is deep in Marvel continuity. But on the other hand, he gets 6 issues free to just deal with his own stuff. When I first read this, I felt the series was totally derailed by the crossover in the second trade. Rereading it again, I don't feel it's totally derailed. Ewing does a good job keeping things on course, but we'll talk about the second trade. So I had a few guesses at your favorite panel. One was on page 3. We have the Black Panther assuring his Dora Milaje that in a world of mental possession, transtemporal duplication, and human error, it's always okay to ask questions. Or I thought maybe on page 7, we have Ewing echoing Hickman's great phrase, "Everything dies" from New Avengers, but he adds, "except for Galactus." Or on page 13, we have Auntie Monica chiding Galactus that he needs to take better care of his toys because his birthing chamber was used to oppress billions.
Bob, I got to go. Once again, Black Panther has some of the best lines in this. This particular piece here, when they show how he is transported, it goes inside his mind and you see how he's constantly tormented by not living up to his father's expectations. And that's a big piece of it. And they do a phenomenal job of illustrating that whole transference.
Yeah, which is an interesting alternate version of what we see from the ghost of all of Panther's ancestors in Hickman's New Avengers.
Yeah. Correct.
My favorite bit was on page 9, that after Panther arrives, they call it translocation, but it's teleportation, basically. After he teleports to Galactus in the Ultimates, Galactus salutes Panther for avoiding total conceptual collapse during the process.
Excellent job, Panther.
All right, Matt. So the cliffhanger here is that Galactus, after intervention from the Ultimates, restores the first world he devoured, and he has become, cue the title, the Lifebringer.
Yeah, I was really excited to actually understand the origin of this particular version of Galactus, because in Marvel Snap, they have an alternate art for the cards, and this is one of them, and I have no clue what this is from. It's just like Gold Galactus.
Lifebringer Galactus.
But later on, Bob, I love how Carol Danvers refers to him as just a palette swap.
That's a good joke. That's a good joke. Well, moving on to issue 3, one little bit of trivia corner to begin with, Matt. I'd forgotten this, but based off what he does here and based off what he does in X-Men Red, it's pretty safe to assume that Al Ewing, like John Hickman, is a bit of a Legion fan, the DC Legion of Superheroes. But like John Hickman, Ewing has not much worked for DC. I think he's got 1 series from DC. And so, like John Hickman, Ewing works out his Legion fandom by having the Shi'ar Imperial Guard do Legion-type stuff in his Avengers comics and his X-Men comics. So I thought that was a neat connection.
The minute I looked at those pages, I'm like, did I switch comics? What am I reading here? It looks like Legion. It switches everything up. But yeah, he needs to do a Legion series. Oh. That'd be awesome.
Well, Matt, I don't know if you saw the news, but Josh Williamson, who's a writer I sometimes like and sometimes don't like, but Josh Williamson is going to do a Legion series.
Oh, good.
Not super surprising, because he's been using the Legion pretty heavily in a Superman run. But I'm happy to have it back. It's been longer than I thought since the Brian Bendis Legion, so it's nice. But even though I'm looking forward to the Josh Williamson Legion, assuming we're still podcasting when it comes out, I want to cover it in some form on the podcast. But that said, what I really want is not a Josh Williamson Legion. It's an Al Ewing or John Hickman Legion.
That would be amazing. Bob, on the 5th page, we have Carol Danvers talking to herself, her reflection in a window, but the reflection is actually Auntie Monica.
Yep, it's actually Monica Rambeau, which was something we saw in the Mighty Avengers comic we covered the week before, where Monica presents herself to Blue Marvel as Blue Marvel, but naked. And so here she's just pretending to be Captain Marvel's reflection, and she's also asking, granted, Monica and Carol are friends, so it's not that invasive, but she's asking pretty invasive questions about Carol's relationship with Rhodey, with War Machine. And so, I don't know, Matt, which form of Monica's light-bending shape-shifting did you prefer?
I like how you said Blue Marvel butt-naked. Like, it could go either way. It's Blue Marvel butt-naked, or it's Blue Marvel butt-naked. You know what I mean?
I strive for ambiguity.
This was foreshadowing, because I didn't know they were in a relationship, so I'm glad he pointed that out, that there's some more going on there.
That's going to be, we'll see, that's a major thing in the Civil War II crossover, not just in this comic, but in the overall Civil War II comic. So, another little bit of trivia, Matt, is do you remember Puck from Alpha Flight?
Of course I remember Puck, Bob, but he's missing his little black outfit and little hoodie thing with a big P on him.
If I'm remembering right, this comic is coming out at the same time as a Captain Marvel solo comic that's more about her running Alpha Flight, her running the space station, and Puck's a major supporting character in that. I wouldn't be opposed to covering it, but it's not something that I'm in a hurry to. I just thought I'd make that connection. If here's Puck from Alpha Flight, he's a supporting character and the companion solo at this point.
I feel like Puck was Wolverine's trainer for that fastball special thing he does.
Oh, he must have been. I didn't think about that. I'm just going to make this connection real quick because maybe it someday we'll cover this. Al Ewing has a very worked out theory about the fastball special in his Krakoa X-Men book, which we'll eventually get to.
Excellent, because we need to know how that works out. You know, Wolverine can throw lots of people.
I'll just say this maybe to confuse you, Matt. Basically, he has a text piece where he says that the fastball special is the first stage on the development to the X-Men resurrection protocols, which I thought was just a really fun idea.
That's interesting.
Yeah. What goes down on page 7, Matt?
Well, on page 7, we have Emperor Gladiator, and he shows up as a hologram to chew out Carol Danvers because she's doing stuff she shouldn't be doing. And his eyes are even lit up like he's going to cross the cosmos with his laser eyes. Like, he's that powerful.
It's nice to have a Gladiator given the Ultimates and Captain Marvel specifically crap for the crazy things.
Yeah.
And I wanted to note on page 8 that Blue Marvel and Black Panther are getting along remarkably better than they were at the end of Captain America and the Avengers. And I did want to ask, do you remember from late in the Hickman run when we have old man Steve Rogers and S.H.I.E.L.D. versus the Illuminati versus Luke Cage's Mighty Avengers? And was Carol Danvers on the S.H.I.E.L.D. side of that?
I'm pretty sure she was on the S.H.I.E.L.D. side.
Do you remember if she expressed much in the way of Chanel's or reasoning? I don't
know
her doing that, but I just assume that she's usually going to be more establishment leaning.
Yeah, I didn't feel like she really did a great deal in the Hickman run until Battle World, where she's captured by Sinister.
That's a really good point. I didn't think about that, but you're absolutely right. Like Spider-Woman, a little more than Spider-Woman, but like Spider-Woman, she's there, but she's not very prominent. Well, Matt, we find out that the next problem that Blue Marvel wants the Ultimates to solve after Galactus is he wants to play continuity cop because the original X-Men, Young Loki, Two-Gun Kid, Ben Grimm, Blackbeard, Ultron, and Dr. Doom have all been abusing the timeline. Blue Marvel wants to fix the timeline.
I really appreciate, this is actually my favorite panel, because you know how I feel about time travel, and I appreciate Blue Marvel using the whole Back to the Future logic here that you hate.
Well, the comic seems to hate it too, Matt, because it turns out that it doesn't apply at all to the Marvel Omniverse.
Well, Blue Marvel and I, we share the same feelings about the multiverse, and the Blackbeard reference was incredible. And listeners, if you don't get the Blackbeard reference, I encourage you to go back, like we said earlier, read some of that early Fantastic Four. It's nothing like this, but it's absolutely insane.
Maybe that's the first Marvel time travel story. Yeah. At least the first one with Silver Age Marvel superheroes, at least. And we cover it, listeners, in our first episode on the Fantastic Four epic, which is a fun episode. So, Matt, we have basically a new character show up, Raz Malhorta. I didn't remember him being in this comic, and this is apparently his second appearance. I guess he debuted in Nick Spencer's Ant-Man in an annual of that. I'm not sure if I read that annual or not. I read the main series, but I don't know if I read the annual. But anyway, he's not doing this in that annual. He's just himself in that annual. But in this issue, he's going to take on Hank Pym's old identity as Giant Man.
This poor Giant Man character throughout this run, he really has to take a back seat.
My guess at your favorite panel was the next page where Blue Marvel tells Giant Man, thanks for your help in setting us up to do this time travel, but you can only come once you've fought a Cthulhu.
You got to fight a Cthulhu first, guys. Got to take down something big.
So the cliffhanger of issue 3, Matt, is Blue Marvel's old nemesis, Anti-Man, who we will all remember from Legend of the Blue Marvel, returns, and that Q title is Outside the Neutral Zone. You remember the Neutral Zone.
Of course I remember the Neutral Zone, Bob. And it's more like Q Anti-Man looking way cooler than he ever should. Because this last panel, man, that he looks way better than he did in the Blue Marvel stuff.
What's going on early in issue number 4, Matt?
Well, Bob, I do appreciate the retelling of Anti-Man's origin. Because in case you did miss Adam, the Blue Marvel, we read so many comics. And Ewing does a great job ensuring that all the pieces you need to understand this story are here. In my opinion, reading the Ultimates, he does cover everything you really need to understand the bulk of the story.
I think, like, what he's doing here requires it a lot more than what he was doing.
You have to be able to expand your brain here for this one. It's not as easy to follow if you can't handle that cosmic level Marvel reading.
At some point, should think about, we don't need to do this anytime very soon, but Ewing has a good two miniseries called The Defenders that do some pretty similar stuff to this. We should think about doing that at some point.
Well, Bob, we do find out that Blue Marvel has been exploring the Neutral Zone for quite some time.
There's specific Neutral Zone exploration armor for both Blue Marvel and Captain Marvel. And I wanted to ask, did you like the armor? And maybe more importantly, Matt, are the exploration armor of the two Marvels, are they toyetic?
Oh, they're beautiful, Bob. That is some beautiful armor on both these characters. I do wish Blue Marvel had a cape, but that Captain Marvel exploration armor, I'm curious if they've put that in a video game or anything as an alternate attire. So I'm going to have to go dig that up.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you that I don't think they're beautiful. But look, Matt, does Anti-Man, I don't think this is a new costume so much as Rockford is just drawing the hell out of it.
It looks way better here.
Yeah. But does Anti-Man's look remind you of the X-Men villain Strife?
I mean, it's a stupid helmet.
Yeah, it's a stupid helmet.
It's got no eye holes.
So I had two guesses at your favorite panel for issue number 4, Matt. One was on page 7, where the Panther asked Blue Marvel, do you want to stop Anti-Man, my friend, or do you want to end him? Then another one was somebody else asking Blue Marvel a question, and this was on page 15, when Blue Marvel's son, Kevin, asked Blue Marvel why he can forgive Galactus, but not Anti-Man.
It's definitely the Kevin panel. The Neutrals almost have some really strange travel rules. Because he can just show up wherever his dad is located when he shows up. I don't get it. And then they just leave him there.
If you want me to no-prize it, you could say something about radiation that Blue Marvel and Dr. Positron, Blue Marvel Jr., were exposed to when Kevin was lost in the Neutral Zone ties him to them, so it's easy for him to manifest around.
That makes sense to some degree. It also makes sense, too, because in the early stages of Blue Marvel going into the Neutral Zone, we don't see Kevin as much.
All right. So the cliffhanger for issue number 4, Matt, is Eternity. That's basically the manifestation of Eternity tells Lifebringer Galactus that the Ultimates have seen something they can't have seen in the Neutral Zone. So, cue title, Leave No One Behind.
Yeah, and if you've never seen Eternity as a character...
He's in Thor 4, the movie.
He is. It's a hard thing to grasp.
Oh, man. It's great. As I say every time he shows up, he's from the Steve Ditko Doctor Strange run original.
Yeah.
Most artists have a fun time doing Eternity, but the Ditko one is still probably my favorite.
It's not a bad thing. It's just, wow, the idea that the universe is a person or a creature or a thing manifested that has its own soul in a sense.
Matt, do you want to talk about the cover of number 5? And I want to do a little personal reflection leading into our trivia corner.
So on the cover of 5, Bob, we've got these really cool fragments that are broken up. And they show some key moments in the Marvel Universe. I thought it was really well done. You've got the Phoenix Saga. You've got Civil War. You've got Gwen Stacy dying. You've got a scene of Wolverine getting blasted by a Sentinel from Days of Future Past.
Nice.
That was really well done. And then you've got all the different Ultimates in different areas just freaking out. And it says, the end of time.
This was the first Al Ewing comic I read. I read it back in 2017. I liked it a lot then. And I like it even more now, though, because when I read it in 2017, I think I had started Hickman's Avengers run a couple of years before. But I definitely didn't finish it. I read the whole of Hickman's Avengers run, but I think I just didn't read Secret War because it just seemed too much. So when I originally read this, I had not read Secret Wars. So this issue starts right on page 3. We have a flashback page of Reed and Franklin and the Molecule Man recreating the multiverse at the end of Secret Wars, which listeners, you'll know if you followed along with our coverage of Secret Wars. And I have no idea what in the world I would have made of this page in 2017.
Having read my initial Hickman stuff. So when I look at it, if you don't have the pictures and you just read the text, it's not that complicated. Apparently, a kid rebuilt the Earth is all it's showing. You can assume that kid is Reed Richards' kid. The problem you run into is when you look at Molecule Man. You know, what's up with that dude?
I would have, in theory, have known who Molecule Man was because he does show up in late Hickman Avengers. But I don't know if I would have recognized him. And I would have known that Franklin has godlike powers, and I would have recognized Reed and Franklin. So it wouldn't have, I guess I could have processed what that is, but I don't know if I would have recognized it as being from Secret Wars or not.
But Ewing doesn't give any specifics in his actual writing, so it gives you up to interpretation.
I'm not saying that as like a criticism necessarily. It's just like interesting.
Oh, no, I understand what you're saying. You just don't have all that context at that point. Yeah. You can still understand what's going on, at least.
We also very quickly on page 10 have another Hickman reference, which is Lifebringer Galactus saying everything lives. And I should have caught that in 2017, but I'm honestly not sure if I would have.
This Lifebringer Galactus does rescue the Ultimates because on their way back from the neutral zone with Connor, their ship falls apart. Galactus has taken a liking to the Ultimates at this point.
What goes down on page 13?
Well, on page 13, we do see that time is like spaghetti. And if this sounds familiar, it's because it's the exact way that the Michael Keaton Batman explained it in the Flash film.
I didn't see the Flash film. You did explain the Flash film to me. I don't know if you explained Michael Keaton's explanation in the Flash film to me.
The man literally is making spaghetti and shows what's going on with the spaghetti. And it looks a lot like what you're seeing here. So I'm, okay. Someone may have lifted a little bit.
Your dominant theory of our Al Ewing read is that both Marvel and DC movies are taking a lot from Al Ewing.
A whole lot, yes. And I do like the idea, though, like weighted events, but it's been done before. That's not unusual. Yeah. You just have these key moments, these anchor points, to use an MCU term. But I love the way that it's explained by Lifebringer here.
Nice. So I had one guess at your favorite panel. And so that's on 14. Galactus is lecturing the Ultimates in a metafictional way about how both the past and the future of a superhero universe is in constant flux. Then we get to see glimpses of many different futures from the Marvel Universe over the years. We see Deathlok, we see Bishop, we see Cable, and then we see a future Avengers led by Danielle Cage.
Yeah, I really did like that panel. I thought that was cool to acknowledge all that future history.
And then what about page 15, Matt?
So as they're talking about all this time stuff, and I'm all into it, and I'm just, oh, okay. They're really getting into time travel. They're going off on these things. This is so cool. Connor, Anti-Man, decides to start bringing up his cage stuff about eternity being caged. And I love how Blue Marvel turns around. He almost gives the option. Like, yeah, Galactus, he's not with us. Just ignore that dude. He doesn't say that, but it's implied. We don't need the illusions right now. Just shut up.
We're learning about the nature of ultimate reality. Even though you are perceiving an ultimate reality that's more ultimate than reality.
Of course. And Galactus acknowledges that, and he mind wipes him in a sense.
Matt, in the cliffhanger, it turns out that Thanos was spying on the Ultimates, Galactus, Eternity, and the true nature of comic book reality. And what he saw was, cue title, unimaginable.
Now, Bob, the last time we saw Thanos, I feel like it was in Battle World when Doctor Doom rips his spine from his body.
I believe that's correct.
I don't know where he's been up to this point, but it looks like he's breaking through the fabric of reality here.
Yeah, I think this is probably just how he comes back. I don't think he would have been up to that much in between, because this is launching right after Secret Wars.
This is his way of coming back.
Our final issue of the first trade is number 6, Matt.
Love this issue.
Our guy, Christian Ward, is on the art. Christian Ward is great. No insult to Kenneth Rockford, but man, Christian Ward is great. Listeners, go listen to our episode on Batman City of Madness that's written and drawn by Christian Ward, if you have. We did it a couple years ago. So, Matt, I wanted to guess that your favorite panel was either on page 6 or page 11. On page 6, we see the chained eternity that Anti-Man has been seeing. Or on 11, we see Galactus refusing to return to the status quo, refusing to reset, and he punches Master Order in the face.
Yeah, while I enjoyed the whole Master Order, Master Chaos piece, my favorite panel was actually on 15. I got absolutely giddy, Bob, at the returning of Molecule Man post-Secret Wars.
Yeah, so we saw Molecule Man with Franklin and Reed in the flashback in the earlier issue. Yeah, he comes back in... I did want to ask a specific question. So you really liked 15 in general, but did you like the detail of the Legos and the Rubik's Cube floating around Molecule Man in his sort of extra universal den?
Yeah, he just hangs out. He's got a PlayStation. He's got a Lego. He's got a record player. All the stuff that most people tend to enjoy. He's got a pinball machine.
Would you call it a man cave or a boy cave?
Yeah, I'll just call it Molecule Man's cave.
Molecule Man's cave.
But, you know, he invites Galactus in, and Galactus sits down in the recliner and throws him a soda from the 80s. My bad.
We brought this up earlier, right? But this is where we get the bit where Molecule Man asks if we're still in the 7th universe or if we're in the 8th omniverse after the events of Secret War. So the question is, what Reed and Franklin and the Molecule Man did it just recreate the 7th universe, or does it authentically count as a break into an 8th?
Right. See, my understanding is we're now in the 8th. That was my, based on this discussion.
I took it to be more ambiguous, but maybe I missed something.
That's just my interpretation, Bob. It's like the Bible.
The Book of Molecule Man.
On page 17, this is another awesome panel. You've got Molecule Man smiling, then he has this box, and he's doing Schrodinger's Omniverse with the box showing Galactus. That's brilliant. Is it there? Is it not? Did it destroyed? Was it not? And you have no idea. That's a great way to put what happened to the Ultimate Universe.
Which I don't know if listeners will hear the trilling of my cat whining in the background as I do the edits, but if they can hear it, it'll be an interesting little soundtrack to the Schrodinger's Omniverse dilemma.
Well, Bob, at the end of this issue, what do we have going on?
So we have the cliffhanger reveals that the myth of Sisyphus has been a mantra for the whole issue, and it now applies to Galactus's task in reseeding the Omniverse and resisting reverting back to his older status quo. And we also see that Galactus's role here is akin to a creator working in the Marvel Universe. Really makes Galactus stand in for the writer or the artist, and so cue title. Rock and Mountain.
What I'm saying, though, with the end of this issue, you now have a Galactus going around rebuilding the universe, which I feel like that may be what happened in those past, the other 6 at some point. Well,
I'm sure, and I think this a little bit confuses the issue here, because it's raising the possibility that the 8th universe is basically just the 7th, but slightly rejiggered, right? But my sense is that, and I might be totally wrong about this, so take it with a grain of salt, but my sense is that the prior 6 incarnations of the Omniverse have all been radically different.
Oh.
I'm not sure if that's right, but that's always how I took it, is like the universe that Galactus comes from and his design, I take that to be typical of that universe and to be very alien and very different. I don't even know if there were Earths in the
place. That's upset, but you don't know what time that actually occurred. So that was at the end of their universe. Whereas it didn't end the same way as, say, the Ultimate Universe, but it.
On some level, it's already absurd to talk about alternate Earths, right? Because every Earth is so big and so vast, right? That, like, alternate compared to what?
Exactly.
And it's even more absurd on a universal scale, because presumably some of the universes may have been cut short or may have been smaller, but presumably when you're talking about these prior universes, you're talking about billions, if not more, years, and you're talking about universes that are as vast as our own, which is to say functionally infinite. So I guess that does raise the interesting point of how can you even make comparisons across that?
You really can't. For all we know, every single one of those universes at some point had a life or Galactus building planets. I don't know. There's some form of that. Because, you know, Bob, Galactus never dies.
There's the argument that I've given on the podcast before that I like, that Galactus is a universal constant like death. But I'm not sure. When you say Galactus is a universal constant, do you mean he's a universal constant for the 7th universe, or do you mean something like the Devourer is a universal constant across all instantiations of the universe? And I don't know.
I don't know, Bob, but apparently in the 7th universe, that's when he became a Devourer. That's a problem. Yeah. I just asked too, Bob, did you like the manifestations of chaos and order in these issues?
That's an old thing. I think, is it Lord Chaos and Master Order?
Yeah, I believe so.
They showed up when we looked at Starlin's Infinity Gauntlet, right?
They did, yes.
And they're old school Marvel cosmic entities. To be honest, I don't know very much about them. They haven't been in much of what I've read, or they just didn't stick. But they're a fun idea. I think I probably like them better than DC's Lords of Chaos and Order.
I agree. I enjoyed it and their eventual demise.
Well, any other thoughts about the first six issues of Al Ewing, Kenneth Rockford, Christian Ward's Ultimates, Start with the Impossible?
I think we're good, Bob. We pretty much covered everything ad nauseum, but I will say this next volume, I guess he was required to do a crossover at this point because, you know, you can't do more than like six issues without having to do a crossover. I guess that's like, awesome. What, is that half a year? Can't go half a year without a crossover. So we're going to hit Civil War II in the next volume. Yeah. But I will go ahead and preface that Ewing does a really good job of not messing things up and explaining what happened in Civil War II without too much exposition.
I've never read Civil War II, but it definitely doesn't seem necessary to read.
So, no.
And I think when I first read this back in 2017, 2018, I didn't think it held together. But I do, like, having just read it in 2026 or 2025, I do actually think it holds together on its own just fine.
I agree, because I didn't have that's the thing too, like in the previous Mighty Avengers stuff, I went and had to pick up Axis and stuff because I was just confused by what was going on. Yeah. I wanted clarity, Bob. I wanted the clarity, and I wanted more than a Wikipedia. So I went on there and I read it. But Civil War II, I don't need to do this. I know what happens. It tells me.
Well, in a weird way, that's interesting and more impressive that he was able to do that, because Civil War II, it's about Captain Marvel. She's the central character, her and Iron Man. So it's interesting that in your reading and in my reading, it's easier to follow his comic about a central character in the crossover than it was to follow Mighty Avengers, where he's dealing with not central characters at all in the crossover.
Correct.
That's an interesting little paradox. All right, listeners, well, join us hopefully in a few minutes right after this episode for Volume 2 as we cover Ultimates 7 through 12, or Ultimates Omniversal 7 through 12. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening.